I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Amazing FBA podcast. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Today, we've got Danny from AlcoPix with us. AlcoPix is a product market research tool for Amazon sellers, and it's a trusted data source for over 65,000 sellers worldwide. So there's always a need for product research and tools that help us do that. So always needed. Danny, very warm welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. It's a pleasure speaking with you here today, and hopefully we'll be able to share some of our insights with your listeners.
Yeah, great. Just so quickly, tell us where in the world you're coming to us from, because I always forget to ask that question. It's always interesting.
So I'm based in Israel, and actually AlcoPix has two different headquarters, the R&D based in Tel Aviv, Israel, and the business headquarters is based in Palo Alto, California.
Oh, wow. So quite a few different locations globally. And I know there's this kind of major tech startup in the... This Israeli tech startup seems pretty massive for whatever reason. You've got a real flair for that. So tell us, first of all, let's get to the chase to help listeners. Which marketplaces are we talking about? Are we talking about Amazon only, or is it eBay, or what sort of things does AlcoPix help people research in?
Okay, so AlcoPix supports the three major marketplaces on the US and the Europe, which means Amazon, eBay, and Walmart. Those are the marketplaces where the majority of e-commerce sales happen. In total, AlcoPix supports 16 different markets, 8 of Amazon, 7 of eBay, and Walmart. The reason why we chose those marketplaces is because that before we started AlcoPix, my co-founder and I spent over 6 years building an e-commerce agency that helped online sellers to sell in third-party marketplaces, exactly like eBay and Amazon. And we found out that one of the biggest pain points is dead inventory, or what we call today excess inventory. Research says that almost 20% of overall inventory ends up as a dead inventory, equals to $450 billion every year. So this is the problem AlcoPix here to tackle. From our own records, we have improved results of reducing dead inventory from 20% in average to 7%, which is a significant change for an online business.
Yeah, great. So I'll have to ask you a bit about the dead inventory thing in a second. I mean, first question, I suppose, is what kinds of sellers do you work with? Is it all sort of resellers? And when you say dead inventory, I suppose that particularly happens if you're a reseller and you buy, you know, 5,000 things for the Christmas rush and then you only sell 3,000, that sort of thing. But so is it only resellers or is it private labelers? What sort of people work with your stuff?
Actually, we work with a quite range of sellers. Those can be resellers who used to source new products on a weekly basis, and we help them with the procurement process. Brands who want to know more about their online presence. Private label sellers, of course, who want to perform a decent market research before they invest in their next product, because, as you know, it takes money and energy. Or maybe they want to analyze their competitors' stores and products, which we help them as well. Or dropshippers. Having said that, AlcoPix has also proven to be very useful for brand owners, manufacturers, and wholesale businesses. So you can see that basically the whole e-commerce world can make use of the data we provide.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense because it's in the end, it's kind of marketplace centered rather than the sort of business model centered. Okay, so look, let's come to this, one of the questions, one of my favorite sort of topics to bang on about. Let's get your opinion. The difference, what's the difference in your opinion between product research, market research, and keyword research in an e-commerce context?
Okay, that's an excellent question. Okay, so product research and market research are very much related and intertwined. So when you are researching the specifics of a product, the information is mostly related to different markets. So, for example, you're conducting product research if you're searching for a specific product at AlgoPix. So you get the information about the product specifications and dimensions, product identifiers such as UPC, EAN, and ASIN, and its shipping dimensions. When it comes to market level information, AlgoPix provides the product's market price on different 16 markets, its demand level, competition, sales history, a breakdown of the expenses associated with selling the product, and more. I mentioned we provide sales history information, so it's important for me to elaborate more about this point. We have an accurate report about the sales performance of the product from the past 30 days, consisting of the unit sales and revenues. So those are all data points that you want to look for when conducting product and market research. When you do your research, you already have a specific product in mind most of the time. That's why you use the product identifier for best results instead of simply search for fitness tracker, for example. But obviously, there are situations where you don't have a specific product in mind yet. For example, when you want to browse market opportunities and scout new niche products, you cannot search with product identifiers. Instead, you need to rely on keywords to discover new products, right? So that's why that's what we mean by keyword research. You use broader product keywords for your research and then receive a comprehensive overview of relevant product listings based on your entered search term. And actually, we have recently launched a new tool called AlgoPix Product Discovery that answers this particular situation.
Great. Yeah. So I suppose to summarize from what you're saying, that if you are product researching, you know about very specific products, you're looking at UPCs or ASINs, all the sort of alphabet soup of barcodes that you get from Amazon, which is one of the things that takes a bit of getting head around if you're new to the space. And then the opposite thing, if you're not specific, then you need to think about keywords, which makes sense. So I think the other way I'd put it is that there's the kind of customer-centric view of things versus the product-centric, right? So Customers use keywords, whereas once you've got a product in the marketplace and people are looking for that particular product, it's more about product names, right? So, okay, interesting. And obviously, you've got tools that cover all those different areas. Which types of sellers, then, do you think need to focus on keyword research? Who particularly should be looking at keyword research, whether they're new or more established?
So I think that, first of all, private label sellers, of course, because usually they have in mind a specific niche or category, but they usually don't have a specific product in mind. So the best way to discover new products, to get new ideas, and perhaps see what's going on today, that would be the best for them. In addition, when we're talking about brand owners, so they would like to analyze their brand and they would like to be as generic as they can. So they won't miss any relevant or related competition. And usually people who buy and sell like resellers or wholesalers, they have a specific product in mind because they just got a price list from one of their suppliers. So they have the specific identifier which they would like to analyze. That was the long answer. The short answer is anyone can do whatever he wants. Usually we analyze our users' search patterns, and we see that sometimes wholesalers use the keywords as well, and vice versa, because when AlgoPix gives you unlimited searches on a monthly basis, you don't want to hold yourself, you don't want to block yourself, and you want to get everything you can from our platform.
Great. Okay. So what then, if we zoom back out to those who are just probably more likely to be the new private label sellers than anyone else. But if people are thinking about a new market and you're thinking about what the factors are to decide on that market, what are the top 2 to 3 key factors in your experience and that the data shows are important to be aware of?
This is going to be my subjective opinion, but I would say the 3 top factors are demand, profitability, and competition. First off, sufficient demand is obviously crucial for a successful business, because at the end of the day, you're not going to sell anything if nobody is interested in buying your product. But sufficient does not mean that half of the country needs to be your buyer. So I would say that demand can be considered to be sufficient when you can operate your business profitably. This leads us to the second key factor, which is profitability. Of course, you will want to earn money with your business. It's important to consider all of your costs when calculating profitability. So this means you not only need to factor in the cost of purchasing the product, but also the cost for shipping the product to your customer, the taxes you or him, depends how you price it, needs to pay, any marketplace fee that may incur and fees that you need to pay to a payment provider, such as PayPal, if you sell on eBay, for example. You can only accurately determine the profitability of your product with a complete and accurate picture of your costs. The third factor is competition. Markets that are crowded with competition should be avoided in most cases, because you often end up in price wars that it's a drive down profit for everyone. Competition is usually connected to demand, because the higher the level of demand, the more sellers are attracted to enter the market or to sell this product, right? This is where you need to find a good balance. So you want a market with medium to high demand and low to medium level of competition.
Amen to that. I think it's sounds like a funny thing to say. It's 2019. I always feel, because I've been doing this for years now, that everyone knows this, but they don't. I mean, I continuously work with people who are new to the Amazon marketplace, even people with a strong business background in other ways. They somehow get blinded by the dollar signs, and they see a high demand market, and they just assume that that means it's a high value for them. And of course, it's not about the total addressable market size, it's about how much you can get of that. So I agree, really wonderfully, simply put, medium to high demand and low to medium competition. And also, it's not no competition, folks. There's no real thing as such thing as a profitable market with no competition, at least that's pretty incredibly rare. So let's talk about analyzing demand. Now, how do you actually go about determining demand? Let's talk about Amazon first, but it'd be interesting to touch on eBay, which gets neglected by Amazon sellers. I still think it'd be interesting to look at that. So demand on Amazon first.
So, well, the issue is that nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow, right? So the best you can do is rely on information in the past and combine it with your common sense to come up with a reasonable prediction for tomorrow's demand. In our case, we have replaced common sense with our algorithms backed by using machine learning and artificial intelligence. Now, how important is analyzing the competition? It's super important. It's critical because you're always a step ahead of your competition. Even in a market with low competition, you should never neglect what your competitors are doing. And how do you even know who your competitors are? So one could argue that to answer this question, you first need a competitor analysis. So regardless of the amount of competition you're facing, a competitive analysis lays the groundwork to becoming and staying number one in your field or industry. How do algopics go about competitor analysis? So if we take Amazon as an example, like you asked, there are several things you can look at. First of all, you want to look at the total number of sellers who are offering this product. This immediately gives you a better picture of how many competitors you're facing, right? You will also check if Amazon themselves sell this product. Then you want to check whether the product is already being sold via Amazon FBA, fulfilled by Amazon, or not. If not, this is a good opportunity to provide better service for the customer, right? Another thing is the buy box price. For those who are not familiar with the Amazon Amazon Buy Box. This is the prominent white box on the right side of the Amazon product detail page where customers begin their checkout process. When a customer presses the add to cart or buy now button in this box, they are buying from the Buy Box winner. So actually Buy Box sellers, they get like 90% give or take of the traffic. So it's important to know the Buy Box price in order to be eligible to win it. There are so many other indications, including the product's bestseller ranking on Amazon's catalog, the number of reviews, their quality, and of course, their frequency, and much more. And AlgoPix gives you a better perspective on the competitive landscape by offering all those key pieces of data and much more as the product's rank and Amazon's catalog or categories mapping.
Well, so a lot of sort of common sense things there, but also I think what you're saying about never neglecting the competition, even when you're sort of considering a market, is really important. In the end, what interests me is this question, which you mentioned already about defining what a competition is. And there's a lot of metrics out there in different kinds of software that will say, okay, you've got 10,000 competitors for this particular keyword. So my question is, define competitor, because if you put the keyword into Amazon, for example, red, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something obscure. there's probably everything on Amazon. But if you put certain keywords in, I can't think of one off my hand, red leather gloves with green polka dots, which would be a kind of unusual fashion choice, right? I mean, there's probably somebody selling it, but then you're going to get a load of other results which aren't particularly relevant to the query. So my question is, at what point do you cut off and say, this is not actually our competition, and how do you use machines for that versus humans? It's a big area, but let's just get into it.
It's definitely a big area, and as far as I know, we are the only one who does that. So let's divide. I'm going to divide my answer into two parts. So first, when you're looking for a specific product by using its identifier, so we know how to find this product in different markets to have the normalization and to provide you only with the relevant products. So this is easy. I mean, it's very hard, but when it comes to your question, it's easier because the user entered the specific product and they know that I provide him information only about this specific product. However, what happens if a user tries to search for a broader term and then he gets an unrelevant product? So from one hand, AlgoPix knows how to differentiate between the relevant and non-relevant products. So, for example, if you're going to look for a watch, we probably won't show you a watch battery and a watch wrist and some other stuff that are not relevant for you, right? However, sometimes, so this is clear that we're not going to show it to you. However, sometimes there are things that are like in between and you might be interested in or you might not. So based on your query, based on the, sometimes you can choose the market you're interested in, and you can also check by using our main search engine to check for a price range. So based on this input, the overall input, we give you the product that we think you find interesting most. Now, based on your behavior afterwards, are you going to save this search? Are you going to stay lots of time and to analyze, to read it? Or maybe you wanted, you after 2 seconds, you started searching for another product. So we learn you, we understand what results you find interesting and relevant for your business and whatnot. And we improve ourselves on a daily basis, actually on a search, per search. So if you started your first day today, but you ran 50 different searches, the search number 50 probably will be much more customized and tailored for you rather than search number 3.
Yes. So broadly speaking, your software, and I guess this is probably, you know, whatever software you're using is going to be the same. So if you use a broad term, you want something that can differentiate between relevant and irrelevant products. I didn't even say the word today. And there's always going to be those edge cases where I think this is where a human being who understand the market is going to be critical, because if you don't understand the market you're going into, if you're just being purely led by the numbers and you have no interest in any particular product, or more importantly, in my opinion, a particular type of customer you want to help with a particular problem, then I think you're going to be in trouble when it comes to making decisions about, is this relevant to their query or not? Because you have no idea. So that's interesting that a machine could go so far and not further. I think there's always a human input needed. The other thing is adjusting to behaviors that your machine actually learns. That's really cool, because it's a bit like having an assistant, whether it's, again, a machine or an assistant. You need something that over time learns, oh, Mike doesn't like massive long spreadsheets. He wants a very detailed version, or, you know, that's not the kind of thing we should be spending too much time on. So that's very interesting how you adjust that way. And that's very smart. I think that's a fairly unique feature. That's not something I know of from other products, software products. Product research software, sorry. So great. So we've looked at demand, we've looked at competition. So let's look at profitability. That's always a difficult thing because there are so many different factors to take into account, right? So how does that come into your market choice?
So, well, as I already mentioned previously, profitability is crucial to running a successful business. And to achieve profitability, you need to have a complete and accurate picture of all expenses related to selling a product online. Often, the bulk of your cost is the product itself. But if you're selling low or medium-priced products, other costs play a much bigger role as well. You need to consider fees for shipping, the marketplace, PayPal, and taxes of the market you're selling in. And only when you incorporate all of those costs in your calculations, you can determine your bottom line. And of course, AlgoPix helps you with that as well.
Okay. Are there any particular things that you think people tend to miss out on where they are making these calculations, or what's the biggest mistake you see people you have made, especially when you did your agency days in the past? I guess you were more interactive with your customers directly. What would you say the big mistakes are with the profitability side?
So many times people, they fell in love with a new title. I'm an e-commerce seller, and they say, hey, I just sold, I don't know, $10,000 or $20,000 this month. But in the end of the day, when they're going to their bookkeeping or this accountant and they start analyzing what happens and what's their margin is going to look like, so they get a different picture. And I totally can understand it. I mean, starting a new online business, it's exciting. It's new opportunity. You say, hey, I can conquer the world, right? And when you have the first sale, I mean, it's amazing. You are so excited. You know, we had in our previous company big customers who used to sell offline, and then when they had their first online sales, the CEO, which manages like 200 people, called us and he was so excited. So all they care is about being able to say, hey, we're selling. And of course, if it's bigger companies and they have board members and investors, so they usually reflect it to their investors, and everybody are looking on the result, which is sale. But nobody is taking a look at the profit, which, by the way, we didn't talk about, but we have returns, which is a disaster for e-commerce business. We have so many different factors. So, and as far as I see it, if you can improve your sourcing process, your procurement process, and to reduce your dead inventory from give or take 20%. This is what I'm sure that if you're an online seller and you listen to what I say now, 20% makes sense for you. Just imagine you were able to reduce it to 7%, then take the gap and see how it impacts your profit. So my advice for all sellers is, okay, when you have your very first sales or even afterwards, it's great. But don't forget to take everything into consideration, including customer service, including storage fees, including everything, so you see how important the sourcing process is. If you didn't buy good, you won't be able to be a successful e-commerce seller.
Yeah, great. I mean, that's what they say, is that the profit profit is made when you buy, not when you sell, right? That's a classic thing to forget. And I really like your story about the CEO. He's got 200 people that they're managing, and they're obviously a very significant business, but their first online sale, and they get an excited phone call, because it's not just people who are new to the markets that forget to measure profitability. When I was speaking to somebody the other day who's been selling on e-commerce since 2003, and he's definitely a seven-figure seller. It may even be eight by now. And they had a bad year a few years ago because they just got sort of the red mist descended, and they got obsessed with sales, partly because they were looking at what the competition was doing. It was like venture backed, so they had really huge capital behind them. And of course, it's very easy to get excited and go, why don't we go ambitious and build a $100 million company in terms of revenue? But of course, if it's not profitable, you're going to go broke. So it sounds really, really obvious, and it kind of is, but people forget it. So yeah, I think you're right. This is so funny that even really experienced business people kind of think the internet's this magic money machine and that they can park normal economics. And I like the reality check. And like, no, that's not true. So
that's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.